This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Andy.
Hey, Andy. Bean calling.
Hey, Bean. How are you?
You've been listening to the podcast?
Yes, I have.
That must be very disappointing for you.
Actually, I've been loving them.
That's a tough slog, my friend. What part of the country do you live in?
I live in Kansas.
No kidding. Are you anywhere near the path of the eclipse?
No, I'm at the south end of Kansas. I'm looking at the me and the kids might be driving up to Kansas City to go see my. I've actually been looking forward to this for, I think it was like 6 years ago. I saw something about it on the History Channel and been looking forward to it ever since then.
So I'm not wrong. There is eclipse fever.
Eclipse. Eclipse.
There absolutely is.
You sent me an email after podcast number 3. How come?
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned at the end of the podcast that if there's any listeners that had any interesting topics they wanted to talk about, to send an email, let you know what they were, and we could discuss on the show.
And what was the topic that you thought might be fun to talk about?
North Korea. I've been fascinated by North Korea for 15 years or something like that. Just all the weird facts they do and how the rulers are literally treated as gods and the way they control the minds of the people. It's always kind of fascinated me. And of course, now that they're got intercontinental ballistic missiles, they're coming back into the news in a bigger way now.
Do you remember what it was 15 years ago that first put North Korea on your radar?
All the weird facts about Kim Jong-il, like his golf game. The first time he played golf, he hit 5 holes in 1. He was the inventor of the hamburger in the year 2000. They called it the double bread with meat, and it was his way to cure world hunger. He cured dwarfism. I can't remember exactly when that was. It was sometime in the mid-90s, I believe. They invited this big group of students, and he said anyone under like 5 feet or something like that to come with him, and he has a vaccine, but they ended up just shipping them all off to an uninhabited island.
Oh, no.
And that was their way of curing dwarfs and Korea.
It's such a shame that he came up with that vaccine too late for our friend Brad Williams.
I know. He probably could have used it. It would have killed his comedy career, though.
Look, you can say anything you want if you control the TV and the radio as they do in North Korea. How are they able to say those things and get people in the country to believe them?
That's what I've never really understood. But all the defectors, when they leave, that's what they all say, is that they firmly believe this. There's a great book, one of my favorite. It's called Dear Leader, written by one of the most prominent guys to defect from North Korea. And this was in the late 90s, early 2000s. And he wrote poems for Kim Jong-il for propaganda purposes. But he said the first time he met the Dear Leader, they were having a meal. And he noticed under the table that the Kim Jong-il took his shoes off and was using his feet against each other, rubbing them like they were sore. And he said he just shocked him, because how could this great man's feet hurt? You know, he's not supposed to feel pain. He's incapable of feeling such things. And that was one of the first times in his mind that he thought maybe what they've been telling us is not correct.
I mean, I guess if you grow up there and you and your family are brainwashed by a nonstop barrage of fake facts and you don't have influence from the outside world and your people will be sent to labor camps or worse if they speak out against the government, I guess you just fall in line because it's the path of least resistance.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's a portion of people that do think of it as the path of least resistance. And then they truly believe that Kim Jong-il and now Kim Jong-un, that they are a god. They don't poop because they consume all of that energy in their body working to make North Korea a better place.
Mm. It's very difficult for people inside the country to get information from beyond the state, right?
Yeah. It's getting a little bit easier these days. The last few years, there's a little bit more smuggling that was going on. But there's a group, and the author of the book, Dear Leader, he was part of this group. They read all the news from outside the world, including South Korea and America, and they, like any scientific achievement that happens in America or something, they would rewrite that and say that it was done in North Korea, and then they would feed that to the North Korean people on the one North Korean TV station they have and handed out pamphlets and their big assemblies, those kind of things.
Now, when I think of the Koreas, and maybe I'm confusing North and South, but South Korea is such a technology-rich country and has so many companies that make technology for the rest of the world. None of that gets into North Korea? I mean, they're not walking around with Samsung phones that have access to the internet?
Nope, not at all. The internet connection in North Korea is a closed network. It's a very small thing, mainly just around the larger cities used by government officials. They won't have Samsung phones, but they do have some smartphones and computers and stuff, mainly made by companies over in China, because China and North Korea are still fairly close. They do a lot of trade between each other, and that's how North Korea is currently able to finance the country, is with the help of China.
Why do you suppose that there hasn't been a revolution?
Just probably the millions of people that would die because of it. The people in North Korea, they can never rebel. The North Korea has, I think it's either like the third or fourth or fifth largest military in the world. It's on like a couple million soldiers. The majority of the people are constantly hungry. They're actually stunted in growth because of the famine in the 90s. And so they're incapable of rebellion. They would all instantly be shipped off to the camps and exterminated. And so what's just keeping it going is just that fear.
When you see pictures, and I know there aren't a lot, as we've talked about, they're not open borders. We can't go in there with our TV cameras and shoot whatever we want. But occasionally you do see photos and video that come out, and it looks like people are well-dressed. It looks like they live in real cities with skyscrapers. It doesn't look like Syria or someplace. The standard of living is pretty good in North Korea, or no?
Not quite. All the state-assigned photos that they allow you to see all show the good things. The people that are dressed nice walking down the street, they're more or less actors. They're paid. Here, put on these clothes. You're going to walk down as these tourists walk by, and then they get, you know, some rice or something at the end of the day. When you go to North Korea, you always have tour guides with you, and they dictate what you can see and what you can't see. There was a journalist a few years ago. She went to North Korea, and she took a bunch of pictures, and she was getting on the train to go back into China, and a security guard had to go through her camera and look at all of her pictures. And he deleted a vast majority of her pictures. As soon as she got to China, she went to an IT shop, and they were able to restore all the deleted pictures on her SD card. So you actually got to see a lot of the real side of even just the capital of North Korea, the starvation of a lot of the people, how the buildings on the front are all nice and polished with clean glass, but as soon as you went around to the back, you can see that, you know, there is no back. The building's completely empty.
It's almost like a Hollywood movie set.
Basically, that's pretty much how it is.
You mentioned in your email, Andy, that you have not made it to North Korea yet. If you had the opportunity, knowing what you know about the country and how hostile they are to Westerners, would you go?
Not these days. 6 or 7 years ago, it wasn't as bad, even for an American. There was tour companies that were set up, and as long as you followed the rules and listened to what they say, you were relatively safe. There's, you know, such as taking pictures, we're talking about that. Like, if you take a picture of a statue of Kim Jong-il, you have to have the full statue in the picture. You couldn't just take half of it. And there's videos online of people that have done tours over there, and you just have to listen to all the bullcrap about how capitalism is bad, America is the enemy of the world. If you just listen to all that and just follow the rules, it was relatively safe. These days, I would not be as apt to go over there.
But you have been to South Korea.
Yeah, a couple times last winter.
And how's that?
Oh, I like South Korea. It's the people, they're a little more rigid. They don't joke around or are sarcastic as what we are here. The thing that surprised me the most is the first time I was over there, I was talking to the guy that was driving me around, and I asked him, we were talking about North Korea. I said, are you guys worried about nukes at all? And he said, oh, no, we're not worried about it. He's not going to nuke us. We're part of Korea. He's going to nuke Japan and the U.S. before he does anything to South Korea.
None of that sounds like a good plan.
No.
How do you think this current standoff is going to end? We've been at odds with North Korea for 60 years, but I feel like we've never had this public a battle between the two men at the top. What do you think is going to be the result of all of this?
My hope is the generals of the North Korean army, they're smart enough to know that America, Japan, United Nations, we would destroy them if they ever did try an outside attack. So So my hope is that they would stage a coup against Kim Jong-un to shut down that government. It's one thing to control the people. It's another thing to end the country. My fear is that's not the case and that there could be a war likely happening soon.
I do feel like both sides have ratcheted up the language so far that you, at this point, if you back down, you lose face. And the personality of Kim Jong-un and Donald J. Trump seem to be similar in that they're very narcissistic and very concerned with how other people view them.
Right. That's the big fear of it. Because Kim Jong-un, if he starts backing down now, the higher-ups in the military and the Korean people that view him as a god will start losing faith in him.
Well, you are exactly the listener I was looking for, somebody with an amazing topic to talk about. And I'm really, really glad you had the time to squeeze in a phone call from me today. Thanks so much, Andy.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for that podcast.
Got a box full of letters. Think you might like to read. Some things that you might like to see, but they're all addressed to me. Wish I had a lot of answers, 'cause that's the way it should be. But all these questions be directed at me.
So many questions, yet so few answers. That actually would have been a pretty good name for this podcast. It about sums it up, I think. We hadn't already come up with thanks for that podcast, Bean. Welcome into episode 5, my friends. I so very much appreciate you being there. And I want to start today's show by thanking those who answered my clarion call for your help at the end of episode 4. Looking for your stories, your suggestions for topic ideas, people who are willing to be involved and have me call. I heard from a lot of people. And it really meant a lot to me. I can't tell you, especially new in this venture, not knowing when or if it will morph into something more, it helps me a lot to get your feedback. Not that kind of feedback. I mean the comments about the show. Hearing you and what you enjoy and don't helps me a lot in the direction that I should be going. Because who knows? Maybe one day it won't be a hobby. Maybe one day I'll need listeners to survive. A lot of people have been continuing to ask, hey, what's up with this podcast? Is it Musica, Musica, Musica time again on K-Rock, or what's the deal?
Buenos días. Bienvenido al Kevin y Frijole programa de radio. Es hora de música, música, música.
I'm not specifically worried about Radio en Español on 106.7 FM Los Angeles, but I do have some concerns about the merger coming up. If it's just us girls, and I'm being honest with you, CBS is getting out of the radio business after 90 years, and we have merged with another company, by all accounts, a very good broadcast company called Entercom. And I don't 100% know yet, it's a little bit early in the game, to know what their commitment is, shall we say, to the Kevin and Bean Show? Or if they've, shall we say, heard of the Kevin and Bean Show? So I'm just trying to keep my options open and at least get something going in case I need it. So you're my little lifeboat here on this corner of the internet. And again, I appreciate so much you climbing in with me. Now let's move on to our next caller and our next topic. It's the story of a rock and roll legend. You probably know the name. Maybe you know something about the way he lived. Maybe you even heard about how he died. But it's what happened to his body after he died that makes this a fascinating story in rock and roll history.
Won't you scratch my itch, sweet Annie Ridge, and welcome me back to town? Come out on your porch or step into your parlor and I'll tell you how it all went.
Don't worry, I'm not going to bore you with a lot of deep musical history about this guy because you want to get right to the part where he gets his body stolen, driven to the desert, and set on fire. We're talking about the legendary singer-songwriter Gram Parsons. He was a member of the Byrds. He was in a band called the Flying Burrito Brothers. He did not have a lot of success in his lifetime, although in retrospect, he has been given the honor of being the king of alt country. Some even call him the king of country rock. He didn't write quote-unquote hit songs, but many of his numbers have had a long influence. Artists such as Willie Nelson and the Counting Crows, Beck and Sheryl Crow, Elvis Costello, Wilco, Dwight Yoakam, the Pretenders, and so many others have recorded Gram Parsons songs. He was only 26 years old when he died. If he had just hung on for a few more weeks, he could have been part of that 27 Club with Jim Morrison of the Doors, with Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones, Kurt Cobain, Amy Winehouse, but no, he was 26. And on September 19th, 1973, his body was discovered in Room 8 of the Joshua Tree Inn in Joshua Tree National Park, California. The idea for this conversation
was suggested by a podcast listener named Chris, and I got him on the line from his home in Auburn, California, near Sacramento. And I started by asking him, how did Graham Parsons end up in that motel room?
He loved to go out and enjoy nature and get high as a kite. Perhaps kind of the movement at the time connecting with nature, but enhancing that through chemicals as well.
Did they do an autopsy on the body? Because I heard that he had something like enough drugs in his system to kill three men.
That is true. The San Bernardino coroner did an autopsy on the body. Now, the cursory glance at it, interestingly enough, listed natural causes. But after the stealing of the body, the coroner found that the death was caused by multiple drug abuse due in part to whiskey, barbiturates, and cocaine.
Tell me about his manager.
Manager Phil Kaufman is his manager and also a record producer. Interestingly enough, this guy has also produced Charles Manson album. So kind of a interesting musical footnote there. Kaufman and Parsons, and what amazes me is kind of the loyalty that they have, the relationship that they have.
They were best friends, but it's unusual to hear the kind of deal that they made with one another. When did it happen? Do we know when they made that promise to one another?
We do. At Clarence White, another member of the Byrds, they were at his funeral. And Clarence, he died in Palmdale. He was hit by a drunk driver. And it is another young age, only 29. Parson asked Kaufman, he said, that don't let this happen to me. You know, he wanted to be cremated and have his ashes scattered in Joshua Tree, which was their favorite place to go.
And the body was on its way to LAX to be sent back home, quote unquote, to New Orleans to be with other family members, right? Graham Parsons' father was still alive, lived in New Orleans, and for some financial reasons, as I remember it correctly, he wanted the body in Louisiana because he stood to inherit more of the estate if he could prove that Graham Parsons was a Louisianan, correct? Do I have that right?
That's correct, but the body was actually at LAX when Kaufman and it was Michael Martin, Parsons' assistant. They show up and Kaufman had a Cadillac hearse, which pretty awesome right there. But they posed as funeral workers and they conned the cargo manager to take the body. Well, it makes sense. These guys show up with a hearse, and even if they don't have paperwork, it's like, oh, yeah, it must be legit. Who's going to steal the body?
Yeah, completely understandable that the guy would just go along with it. So did they have any problems once they got the body getting out to the Joshua Tree? Because I'm sure at that point somebody noticed that the coffin was missing. Were the police alerted? Did they go looking for Kaufman or what?
From what I understand, they drove the 3 hours to Joshua Tree Monument without problem. On the way back, they did have, I think, the hearse broke down. The police had detained them, but he didn't. As I recall, the police didn't get their names, so he wasn't sure. I think Kaufman and Martin made it back to L.A. afterwards, but I never heard that they encountered any problem driving out there.
After the ceremony in the desert, which, as I understand, they used too much gasoline, it became quite a fireball at one point.
5 gallons of gasoline. They opened up the casket lid, poured it on there, and lit it up. After that, left it and headed back to L.A. Well, a camper, you bet, the campers did alert the park authorities, which they found, and no, the job wasn't finished. It wasn't complete. They found the body bag with the partial remains there.
So eventually they do go looking for Kaufman, and he is arrested.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they identified Kaufman and Martin both. I think it was probably really hard to miss that Cadillac hearse.
So what ended up happening? He goes to court, and he's found guilty?
Found guilty, both of them. 30-day suspended sentences. They were fined $300 and charged $700 for the casket. And I recall that Kaufman had a fundraiser after that to raise the funds to pay that.
As upset as some people were, people who didn't understand why he did it, it was a surprise to many that it turned out it wasn't against the law to steal a corpse, right? His biggest problem was the casket.
At the time, there were no laws in California about stealing a body.
Hey, thanks to podcast listener Chris for the suggestion and for the conversation about Graham Parsons. By the way, if you're interested in a theatrical dramatization of this story, it does exist. About 15 years ago, a motion picture was made. Christina Applegate is in it. The great Michael Shannon is in it. And our friend Johnny Knoxville plays manager Phil Kaufman.
We had a pact that whoever died first, the other would come out here and set him free. Graham gave his word and I gave mine.
It's called Grand Theft Parsons. I wish I could recommend the film to you. It is not that good, but I did want you to know it was available in case you were in the mood for something like that. By the way, one final thing. After I talked to Chris, I started thinking about what happened to the rest of Graham Parsons' body, the part that didn't go up in flames in the bonfire in the desert, the part that the campers found that was left behind. Well, it turns out it did eventually make it back home to New Orleans. And then I thought, wait a minute. I'm in New Orleans. I should go visit. And that's what I did. The Garden of Memories Cemetery and Funeral Home is in Metairie, Louisiana, not far from Louis Armstrong Airport. So I drove out there the other day, and I found Graham's final resting place. There are two stones in the ground of the Garden of the Last Supper section of the cemetery. One has a drawing of Graham Parsons with his guitar, and the other includes lyrics from one of his songs called In My Hour of Darkness. Here's what it says on Graham Parsons' tombstone. Another young man safely strummed his silver-stringed guitar, and he played to people everywhere. Some say he was a star, but he was just a country boy. His simple songs
Some
confess.
Some say he was a star, but he was just a country boy. His simple songs confess, and the music he had in him so very few possess.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to both of my guests, and thanks to you for listening and for continuing to send me your comments at bean@krock.com, on Twitter at Clyde Tumbaugh. By the way, before I go, quick plug, if you haven't yet checked it out, the B-Team podcast is very much worth your time. If you're a fan of the Kevin and Bean Show, you'll love to hear the behind-the-scenes stories about how the show is put together and also hear some great tape and some memories from years past. We have been on the air for 28 years, so there's a lot of stories you probably haven't heard. I've heard some stories that I didn't remember or never even heard about the first time around. It's hosted by our friend Lightning, who is a former producer of the Kevin and Bean Show, our current producer, Dave the King of Mexico, and DJ Omar Khan. It's a lot of fun. Get the B-Team podcast wherever you get this podcast and the Kevin and Bean podcast as well. Thanks a lot. Have a great week. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for that podcast, Bean. Thanks for that podcast, Bean. It's my favorite part of the day. Oh, I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Thanks for that podcast, Bean.
I think it went well. I think it was good.
There weren't any laughs.
Well, that was a tough audience.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.